Good morning. At 9 o'clock, I looked out across people and I said they look quite a placid lot, really. But it was very interesting when I spoke to them after the service, some of the stories that came out. Because I asked them a question that I'm going to ask you, and you don't look quite such a placid lot, I have to say. Some of them you I know are quite militant, actually. But the question I asked was, have you ever been on a demo? Have you ever been on a demo? Anyone? Okay, I thought it would be a great many more of you. We didn't have any suffragettes still at the 9 o'clock service, although somebody told me about an 80-year-old lady who had chained herself to the railings at Molesworth when they were campaigning against the armaments there. So, you know. But you might remember, I certainly remember things like Ban the Bomb marches in the 60s, and then they were followed in the 70s by kind of CND marches. Those were huge. And then in the 70s, we got to sort of all the miners' activities. There was the MUM demos. There was the TUC. And then, you know, things seemed to escalate around the world. We saw Tiananmen Square. We saw the awful demonstrations at the G8 summits. Recently in Paris, of course, there was big demonstrations in response to the Charlie Hebdo attacks, things like that. And I had to laugh when the comedian Susan Kalman was saying that she was in London last week and there were people she saw with placards saying, "Honk if you support junior doctors." And she said she got a little bit embarrassed of honking after a while because she wasn't actually driving a car. So eventually she went up and she just gave them a hug instead. But, you know, seriously, emotions can run really high, can't they, in demonstrations? You know, angers are whipped up. And violence can so easily erupt. Or you get these awful kind of standoffs. And things can turn really, really nasty. You know, sometimes just like that, they turn very nasty. And this is exactly what Jesus is trying to avoid, actually, when we hear from Matthew that he walks away from the crowd. And he tells the people who come with him, "Don't tell them who I am." So in a sense, if we're talking about the things that Jesus said, on this occasion, it's what he didn't say, in a sense, that's important. But we're also looking at what he did. Something just an aside here to mention, this business of Jesus telling people, you know, don't tell them who I am, or don't tell them what I've done, or I'm going to speak in parables so that you don't quite understand. It's quite hard, you know, if you're on message these days, then you take every single opportunity to get your message known, don't you? So why was he doing this? And it's a bit of a puzzle, and a theory that came about, it was actually in 1901 by a man called William Reed, and that's W-R-E-D-E. He called this the Messianic secret. And he sees it appears particularly in Mark's gospel, these accounts appear, and we know that, of course, that was the first gospel to be written. And he says that, you know, it's possible that Mark was putting those things in because it didn't quite fit with the teachings of the emerging early church. But people have sort of, you know, had some counter-arguments to that. This theory this concept has come and gone in terms of popularity with theologians and what have you. But actually, some of the arguments around it are really worth looking at. So thankfully, Wikipedia's got a fantastic article on it. So if you type in Messianic secret, if you're interested, you might find some things there to help you. But it's clear from Jesus' actions here that he's saying he wants no publicity. And because he knew only too well, there'd been any number of false messiahs coming before him. In fact, there would have been quite a handful of people around at his time, at his place, claiming to be the Messiah. He also knew that it's very easy for people to be kind of whipped up to rebellion. I mean, these were an oppressed people politically. And so in a sense, it would have been very easy at that time for this kind of great, thing to go on and people to get whipped up behind him and let's overthrow the Romans and et cetera, et cetera. And that would detract from his true purpose. Confrontation would come, but not just yet. Now it strikes me that there are a kind of two types of demo or demonstration. There's either to shout out, or there's to act out. Isaiah says, I, the Lord, have called you to demonstrate my righteousness. And so Jesus is certainly not shouting out here. He's acting it out. And Jesus demonstrated that God's kind of justice goes hand in hand with his righteousness. So there's righteousness and justice. I think there's a lovely phrase somewhere in the Bible where justice and righteousness kiss or embrace or something like that. And interestingly, the Greeks, the ancient Greeks, kind of had it right when they defined justice as giving to God and to men that which is their due. And I just wonder, why couldn't the Jews grasp that? Why did they grasp that justice is about giving to God and to men that which is due? Because actually, that's the summary of the law, isn't it? That Jesus said, when asked, what do I have to do? You must love the Lord your God with all your heart and love each other as yourselves. As we know, all these things can go out of the window, can't they? When people kind of get on their high horses, or they bang their drum, or they club together and they say, wow, let's do something about this. And things can turn very violent for their own versions of justice. I don't know if you've been watching, there's been a lovely documentary series by Simon Reeve about Greece. He's a writer and travel documentary maker. And he was filming in the central square of Itzakia, which is a part of Athens, which has a really rich history of being the center of political thought in Athens. But now it's become the center of anarchy and of rioting by very disillusioned youths. And he had only just started filming there when his crew were accosted by two young men who threatened to kill the cameraman, quite clearly, I will kill you, if you don't stop filming, delete that video, and get out of here. The young in Greece are politicized and they're angry. And they feel that their elders have just ruined their country. And actually, they're not wrong, because unfortunately, the older generation in Greece have ruined that country, economically, certainly. But their anger has kind of boiled over, and it is understandable. Later that evening, Simon Reeve went down into the centre of the city, and in a street where life seemed to be carrying on as normal, people were sat in the cafes as usual, they were in restaurants having meals and what have you, there were children there. But there were young masked men throwing petrol bombs in the street and being charged by riot police. And they've just got used to this. This is what's going on in their city night after night. But I wonder if it's really helping their cause. So Jesus knew of the death threats that were being made against him, and he just turned his back and he left. He kind of demonstrated another way. And I suppose to us it sort of sometimes says, sometimes we can get caught up, somebody said to me earlier on, we can get caught up in futile arguments, can't we? And futile causes, and expend all our energy on that, and it doesn't actually bring about what is intended. When it says in Isaiah, the phrase that's translated in the Bible is to raise his voice in public, what it actually means in the Hebrew is it's the same word that is used for the barking of a dog, or the croaking of a raven, the bawling of a drunken man, or the uproar of a discontented audience at the theatre. It's that kind of useless stuff. So, you know, Jesus is not going to enter into a brawl or some other kind of fracas. And what he does is he kind of demonstrates the nature of the servant leader, I think, here. It's serving God, serving the people, and serving his purpose by not being, you know, dragged into this. It's shortly going to be the Queen's 90th birthday, and there's a book due to come out entitled Servant Queen, because it seems increasingly that the Queen is being hailed as a servant leader herself. And she's become more vocal in recent times about whom she serves. She says she serves both God and her people. You might say that she's grasped that Greek idea, giving to God and to men that which is their due. And I think we should be grateful for the way in which she has exercised and demonstrated her leadership. But Jesus, you know, hailed as a king, prophesied before even his birth, was destined not to demonstrate from a throne, but from a cross. But just at this point in time in Jesus' ministry, it's just not the time for confrontation. Now is not the time, and he knows that. And that's not to say that it doesn't come, and it's not necessary, as we know. But just now, it would carry with it all the risks that I've spoken about earlier. And so Jesus withdraws. And he's not being weak or reckless here. I think he's being wise. And he's not passive either. You know, sometimes this picture is painted of Jesus. You know, sometimes people have called him like the hippie in the dress. You know, the meek and mild, gentle, just, you know, walked away, didn't. That's actually not true. That's not a true representation. You know, he withdraws wisely. And then with those who come with him and follow him, he heals every single one of the sick amongst them. That's not inactivity or passivity. He's not hiding God. There he's demonstrating God. And at this point, Matthew makes a curious link to the prophecy in Isaiah. And I say curious because if you read that whole section in Isaiah, it's possible it's actually referring to Cyrus, the king of Persia. In Isaiah's time, Cyrus was gradually conquering the whole eastern world. He was establishing the Persian Empire. And that was happening through a Gentile. But Isaiah saw him as being part of the deliberate plans of God to teach a lesson to Israel. There are other things in this prophecy that say, I'm going to show you, Israel, how you should be, how my people should be. And as we know, he showed them through all sorts of things, you know, being taken into exile, being overrun by Persians. And Cyrus was an instrument of God, he wouldn't have realized it himself. And it kind of tells me that we need to be aware and keep our eyes open to the way that God is at work in the world. It's not just through the church. He is at work in the whole world. Because in Isaiah it also says, you know, I made everyone, the whole world, everything in it, all the people, everything, for my purpose. And so don't think that what's going on out there has nothing to do with God. And so we need to be open to that. But in that very strange way that prophecy works, it's almost out of time, isn't it? It sometimes links the past with the present, and it rolls into the future. It's a God's eye view, if you like, outside of time. And so in that way, he's also speaking of Jesus here, quite clearly. And whilst Cyrus is mastering the eastern world, Jesus will be master of the whole world, Jew and Gentile. And so it's a message of hope, not just for Israel, but for all the Gentiles, for us. It's a message of hope for us because of the nature of his mastery. It's not an oppressive regime. He comes not as a conquering king, but a servant king. And one who will demonstrate true leadership, for he will be gentle. It says he will not crush the weakest reed or put out a flickering flame. And as I was speaking about this earlier, it sort of came to me, it's a little bit like if you're training a dog, if anyone's had a dog, if you keep yelling at it to either come back or sit, you know, the dog's just going to run away and cower. But if you sort of let it trust you and then, you know, tell it to sit, and when it does, you go, well done, and you give it a little treat and you pat it on the head, and then the dog wants to do it over and over again, doesn't it? And I was sort of conjuring up images of school days. I had sort of quite a strange school life, and hopefully I'm of a dying generation who had blackboard rubbers thrown at them and bits of chalk thrown at them. And so often education came about by humiliation. You were hauled out into the front of the class and sometimes smacked or hit or just humiliated. Your mistake would be read out for the whole class to know. You know, and we've all, you still remember those things, don't you? Yeah. I said that the abbreviation for Hampshire, the county that I grew up in, was Hamps. And so I got, and actually I've copied it from somebody else. But anyway, I got hauled out in front of the class, a seven-year-old, by the way, and absolutely humiliated for it. Then by contrast, I was then taken from that harsh school into a lovely, lovely, lovely church school that just had the kindest, gentlest people. And of course I flourished. And I could learn things because I wasn't terrified all the time. So, you know, that was a lovely picture of gentle leadership, actually. So it's not like in the boardroom of The Apprentice. He didn't treat the weak with contempt and say, "You're fired." He treated them with understanding. And he didn't extinguish a weak flame, but he blew his life-giving spirit into it so that it kind of burst back to life and light, which is what he does. This is what our God is like. This is our God. And Jesus demonstrates it perfectly. So if you're feeling weak through worry, or your faith is just a little flicker, and be encouraged by this. Be encouraged. God would not crush you. And of course then Jesus said that we're to go and do likewise. If we are his disciples, we have to go and do likewise. So this challenges us to think about, well, how do we go about demonstrating God's justice? And it's kind of like then our whole life needs to be a demonstration, not just those times when we got placards and got out onto the street. Our whole life is a demonstration. So are we going to shout down our opponents? Or are we going to just gently show them a better way? And are we careful not to crush the weakest people who have just a fumbling faith? Or who are just being kind of, If you think of that little flame just being blown about by all the latest ideas and philosophies and the self-helps and the whatever. No. And then, of course, we think about those, you know, who are really truly oppressed, who are suffering enormous injustice, and that we can't, you know, stand by and let happen. And I think, as you know, as I say that, there's probably one place on your mind just now, and that will be Syria. And it's not just the people who are being maltreated and oppressed. It's the people who are doing it as well, are equally oppressed by a theology that says you kill your enemies, you crush your enemies. So how are we to offer gentle justice in that situation, I wonder? We can only learn from our leader, can't we? So it says, he will not falter or lose heart until justice prevails throughout the earth. Even distant lands beyond the sea will wait for his instruction. God, the Lord, created the heavens and stretched them out. He created the earth and everything in it. He gives breath to everyone, life to everyone who walks the earth. And it is he who says, I, the Lord, have called you to demonstrate my righteousness. I will take you by the hand and guard you, and I will give you to my people Israel as a symbol of my covenant with them. And you will be a light to guide the nations. You will open the eyes of the blind. You will free the captives from prison, releasing those who sit in dark dungeons. So he will take us by the hand and guard us until his purpose is fully worked out and it comes on earth. And I was just remembering Alan's great sermon last week where he had that plastic rose that he'd bought as a Valentine. And for those who weren't here, he had accidentally bought his wife a plastic rose, thinking it was a real one and wondered why it was still on the mantelpiece 3 weeks later. But, you know, he was saying, don't settle for plastic Christianity. You know, the shiny, showy short sort, you know, like that luscious red rose with its sort of flock imitation stuff on it. The sort that's all words and no action. So what I'm suggesting to us all is that we go on a demo. Let's go on a demo.